This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day. As we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information, presented by Roseburg Foot and Ankle Specialists. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
With the U.S. House out of session right now, we're talking with 4th District Congresswoman Val Hoyle, who joins us from their office in Eugene. Thanks for being on today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So a lot of different things we could run through here since it's been kind of an evolving thing this week. What's your reaction to the situation with Iran at the moment? It appears to be an end, at least for now, to the interaction between the U.S. and Iran. What's your thoughts about where we're at?
Well, first of all, we should have never been there in the first place. The sort of memorandum of understanding that will be negotiated between the United States and Iran basically puts us where we were before the war started, but $300 billion taxpayer dollars have been spent on this war. American lives have been lost. And this morning, Israel just bombed Lebanon again. The foreign minister of Israel, Itamar Ben-Gvir, said for every Israeli mother's tear that 1,000 Lebanese mothers should weep. I mean, they will not stop bombing Lebanon, and the Strait of Hormuz is closed again. That was as of today. So I don't believe the war is over. I don't believe we should have gone into Iran. I think that our president let Benjamin Netanyahu, who has, different goals than the United States, talk him into going into Iran. And now we're stuck in another war in the Middle East, and gas prices are going up and up and up. So unfortunately, I was hoping that this would be an end to the war, and really appreciate all the work that went into that memorandum of understanding, but it literally blew up today.
Do you feel like then we've really made any real progress?
No. No, they're going to be able to they're going to be able to sell their oil. We are going to give them money. The memorandum of understanding actually doesn't do anything to prevent them from getting nuclear weapons. We're literally negotiating against ourselves for something that we already had. So, look, Iran, they're a hotbed of terror. They support Hezbollah. They support, other terrorist groups. But fundamentally, we attack them and put Americans in danger while we're bleeding money in a war in the Middle East that we should be investing here in the United States.
Now, you have put together what's being called the No War Act to talk about how that ties in with what's been going on.
Right. So there's a process called reconciliation, and it was set up so that after the proper appropriations process, where you negotiate, you work in a bipartisan way, you come up with an actual budget, that if there are small fixes that need to be done, use reconciliation. It means you only need 51 votes in the Senate, and it's just for small changes. This has been used twice for the Republican budget bill, H.R. 1, the big, beautiful bill, and then again to give more money to ICE and Customs and Border Patrol, two agencies that are already funded through 2029. But They used reconciliation for those funding so that they did not have to negotiate with Democrats. Now, Republicans have a small majority. They, of course, are in charge. I accept that because I accept the results of elections. However, we represent almost half the country, and we should have negotiations instead of pushing through these budgets in the dead of night. What my bill says is that you cannot use reconciliation to fund the Iran war. That if we're going to send money, it's, you know, $300 billion, $1 trillion, whatever the president's team is asking for, it should be done in the light of day. The American people should be able to weigh in. We should have a single vote. And so I don't think that this should be just rushed through without a proper process. And that's what my bill would do. Transparency.
And where is the legislation at in moving along?
You know, so far it's just we're just shopping it around. So we have a number of co-sponsors, and when I go back this week on Monday, I'll be looking to get more co-sponsors and bipartisan support.
Now, another thing from this week, NOAA announcing a fishery disaster relief package after what your office termed a long delay, and of course going back to 2023. That was a particularly rough year for those of the fishing industry.
Right. So NOAA, we appropriated and they allocated $123.6 million in fishery disaster relief funding. And for 18 months, you know, that money, including $2.4 million for the Oregon Ocean commercial salmon fisheries disaster, had been held up. So we had the NOAA administrator come in front of my committee, the Natural Resources Committee, and we pressed him on where this disaster funding is. It had been appropriated, it had been approved, and it just hadn't gotten out the door. And, you know, our commercial fishing industry is a really, really big part of our coastal economy. So we want to make sure that we get them, you know, they contribute a lot, they pay a lot of taxes, they hire a lot of people. We wanted to make sure that we take care of them the way they take care of us. And so that money was released, and we were super happy about it.
And how is it looking for the fishing industry this year?
You know, people in Newport are really happy that the Coast Guard helicopter is there, you know, fishing off the coast of, you know, the coast of Oregon. It is not for the timid. And we're looking at a good season. And I've spoken with fishermen just in the past few weeks, and they're feeling pretty good about their opportunities.
Now, here in our region and really around Oregon, in fact, all of the Oregon Department of Forestry districts now dealing with the fire danger situation in fire season. A lot of places going to high levels. The Umpqua National Forest just did that effective today. Are we ready for what is likely ahead when it comes in terms of people and funds to deal with the likely wildfires we're going to be dealing with?
You know, there are some bright spots. First of all, as you said, Kyle, you know, we are having a severe drought. We have, you know, the Mackenzie River at the lowest recorded level. We have less than 5% snowpack. You know, I was driving back with my husband from Eastern Oregon the other day, and we were looking at places where there should be a lake. There's no water. So it's going to be severe. I think that our being able to get the increase in wildland firefighter pay really, really helped so that we actually have the staff. We're working very well with the state, the feds, the Forest Service, BLM, private industry, and our tribal nations to make sure that we attack fires when they start, because it's really dry and we can't let them spread and get out of control. You know, we still have a lot of debris. A lot of the people that work in the forest were laid off because of DOGE. And so we're not in, and of course, you know, Job Corps was ended. We had to fight for that to get that back. So we've got more debris on the ground than we should. Here's what I would say. The majority of fires are started by humans. and we have to be very, very careful. People should absolutely have defensible space around their homes. They should put their to-go bag together. I certainly have mine, and be ready for whatever comes. But the biggest thing that we can do is be careful. We did a wildfire telephone town hall last week, and on Monday, because people said, can you do this again? We're going to have a Facebook Live event where we're talking about what people can do to prepare for this wildfire season, where the danger is. But no, this is going to be a rough season, and we all have to be as careful as possible, especially going into the 4th of July.
And the other day, we had 2 or 3 days of much higher than normal winds around the Umpqua Valley. And in fact, and I don't remember this occurring before, had a fire take off just a couple, 3 blocks from our building here out along Diamond Lake Boulevard. Ended up being a 27-acre fire. And it was on the former mill property out there that's just vacant land. And the reality of that and just how fast that took off, and then realizing that this is not miles away in the forest, but it's 3 blocks from our office, I think kind of put it in some perspective in terms of being ready.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more, more and more fires coming into our urban areas. So we should not be complacent. These fires can happen anywhere, and everything is so dry. You know, that fire almost took off, but, you know, Douglas County responded well. We're able to get that fire under control. We're able to get people the alerts so that they can be prepared to leave should we had to evacuate. And we'll be talking about how to stay up to date on all of those things on our telephone town hall.
And was that scheduled yet for a particular date?
On this Monday.
All right. So we'll be watching for more information on that. And also, at the same time, at the federal forest level, does this come back to more active management being needed to get out there and clean up some of the forest debris that's been on the ground for a long time?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that we're doing in that, you know, the climate has changed and our forests are drier. And, you know, the trees, you can look at them, they are struggling. We're working with a number of our local tribes on tribal co-management of our federal forest lands, as, you know, the federal government is short staff, and really use past indigenous forms of forest management to keep, again, to keep our forests healthy, responding to the climate and the drought that we have, and protecting the old growth that is so, and the ecosystem that is so critical and that makes Oregon a wonderful place to live. But absolutely, we need to be doing more to prevent wildfire.
Talk about your summer legislative priorities, some of the things you're working on, whether Congress is in session or out.
Well, of course, working on the Coos Bay port, we've had a number of people from the Department of Transportation, the Federal Rail Authority, come down to Coos Bay to look at the project. And so we're moving forward on that, making sure that we have, you know, all of our permitting done. And so we're working to make sure that that's moving ahead and that we're doing everything possible that we're doing it responsibly, working on wildfire, working on tribal co-management, and then also with Senator Wyden working on the DASH Act, which will help lower costs for people in housing.
Yeah, talk more about that, because that's been obviously, unless you've been under a rock somewhere, we've got this massive housing crisis that doesn't seem to be getting solved most anywhere. And for younger people that haven't gotten started in getting their first home, it seems to be insurmountable sometimes to try to get there. What can you tell us about this act and how you believe it could help?
first of all, I will say, and this isn't a federal issue, this is a local issue, and a state issue, and, you know, county and whatnot. We need to build more housing. We need to build more. I mean, you know, Roseburg has a 0.5% vacancy rate, the last I checked. So even though it's more a rural community, everywhere on the coast, 0.5% vacancy rate. We need more housing, and we need to be intentional about how we build housing, especially for the people that are coming to live and work in our communities. The DASH Act provides homebuyer assistance, establishes a tax credit of up to $15,000 for eligible first-time homebuyers. Housing tax credit expands the low-income housing tax credit and creates a new middle-income housing tax credit to encourage the construction of affordable rental properties. Because, yes, we need low-income housing. We also need middle-income housing. Again, that kind of workforce housing that allows us to house our teachers and firefighters and doctors and nurses, the people that work at the VA, all the critical people that keep our communities running. It requires the USDA to provide additional grants and loans to construct affordable housing for, you know, low-income rural households. So this is, you know, it's a good bill. And I do think that when we go back, we will be able to get to the House and move through a bipartisan, bicameral housing bill. And it is one of the few bright spots that I see in Congress as Democrats and Republicans are working together to address this housing crisis. And the president has said he will sign that bill.
And of course, I mean, really the issue of housing is not a partisan issue. Maybe the thoughts about how to approach different aspects of it might be sometimes, but we've seen locally, of course, in the Umpqua Valley, folks get offered positions here, come to town, and not be able to find something in their middle class or maybe lower, maybe upper middle class price point, and end up not coming here when some large company or school district or whatever is trying to hire them. They end up staying put where they are because they've already got a house there, which ends up impacting our community with a loss of potential addition to the workforce.
That's exactly right. We, you know, in both John Day and in Coos Bay, they were both working to recruit physicians, and they're in Coos Bay for the Bay Area Hospital, there wasn't a house for this doctor to buy or rent. There wasn't a house for a doctor to buy out in John Day. And this isn't just an Oregon problem. This is a problem across the country. But it is incumbent upon us to rethink how we are approaching this issue. And we can't just look at one segment of the market. And we do have to build differently. We don't want to have sprawl everywhere, but we have to address the fact that we have to build more housing more intentionally while protecting, you know, the land use laws that we have for a reason. But fundamentally, this is, you know, at the federal level, I will support projects from the local level for building more workforce housing, more middle income housing, more low income housing. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a local determination, the county, the state, and the cities.
As we're into summer officially on Sunday, it's the time of year people pay, frankly, less attention to certain aspects of politics and certainly the election process. But we do have the midterm elections. How do you think things are going to go for both the House and the Senate?
I don't know. My biggest concern is that we have, and it's been a long-term active, proactive effort to undermine faith in our democracy, undermine faith in our elections. So whether it's rampant mid-cycle gerrymandering or, you know, saying that they're going to prosecute letter carriers who deliver ballots to Oregonians unless all of our voting data is sent to the federal government. The Constitution states that elections, time, place, and manner are determined by the states. And we had a Republican Secretary of State who brought forward vote by mail. We have a paper copy of every ballot, especially in rural and frontier Oregon, taking off on a Tuesday to go vote in person when your election office could be 50 or 100 miles away. That makes no sense for who we are. And fundamentally, I certainly hope that we'll have some balance and that Democrats will win the House. I feel confident that I have earned the support of people in the district, but you know, I'll be running for election and hope, and I certainly will answer any questions that anyone has, but we don't know. But I think we'll pick up the House. It's possible Democrats pick up the Senate, but it would be nice to have some balance because I think we do better when we have balance.
About 45 seconds left with Congresswoman Val Hoyle. What's ahead for you in the next few days?
Well, we're just going to be traveling around the district, talking to constituents. I head back on Monday, and so working with sort of coastal port communities and our airports, and you know, just happy to be back home.
All right, 4th District Congresswoman Val Hoyle, thanks for being on today.
All right, thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 12:30 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.